From PRI, Public Radio International, and KCRW Santa Monica, this is To the Point.
Mitt Romney, Herman Cain, and Religion in Politics. Hello again, I'm Armin Alney, and this is To the Point from Public Radio International, a daily look at the issues Americans care about most. Mitt Romney is still regarded as the Republican frontrunner, but polls show he lacks enough conservative backing to make him the sure nominee. Last July, Herman Cain said Romney's Mormon religion was no problem for him, but that it would be for Southern evangelical Christians. Even though Cain apologized, did he have a point? And if Romney got the GOP nomination, would his religion turn off secular Democrats and independents? We'll hear different opinions on Romney's prospects and ask, why has Cain suddenly shot up in public opinion polls? What about Rick Perry? On Reporter's Notebook later on, America's 10 years in Afghanistan. First, here's the news.
Support for To the Point comes from subscribers of KCRW Santa Monica and from the Public Radio International Program Fund, whose contributors include the Ford Foundation, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, and the Skoll Foundation, supporting social entrepreneurs around the world. Uncommon heroes dedicated to the common good. Learn more at skoll.org.
Hello again, Mormon Alney, back with To the Point. Southern evangelical Christians will have a big voice in the early Republican primaries. Will Mitt Romney's Mormon religion be an issue? Why has Herman Cain outstripped Rick Perry in public opinion polls? We'll look at Republican prospects today. On Reporter's Notebook, is Afghanistan better off since the U.S. invasion began exactly 10 years ago today? We'll hear what Afghan Americans who went home then are saying now. First, this news update. In what passes for good news in these economic times, the nation's labor market showed some signs of improvement last month. Employment grew by 103,000 workers, not great, according to one economist, but less bad than expected. Greg Robb is senior Washington correspondent for MarketWatch.com. Good to have you on our program.
Thanks for having me.
Is this cause for a sigh of relief?
I know you guys kick us economic reporters when we do these things, but it is a sigh of relief. There was a lot of concern about the economy in the last couple of months, and this jobs report is one place that our questions get answered, and we got some good news. You know, the sky is just not falling.
The sky is not falling. I don't know why you say we are hot tough on you economic reporters. It's just the economic news we don't like most of the time. So how much do you actually need in the way of jobs to make a dent in unemployment? That hasn't changed, still 9%.
Yeah, unemployment's been stuck at 9.1% for more than 2 years, you know, in that neighborhood. And we need monthly job growth in the 200,000, 300,000 per month range to really get the economy moving and get the unemployment rate down.
So this was 103,000, at least partway toward that.
Yeah, it's a little bit good. We'll have to see in the coming months if we can get things moving. It doesn't look like it's – I think we're in the period ahead for sluggish growth, slow growth. Nobody's forecasting a return to such good numbers in the foreseeable future.
What about the sectors? Which ones did the best?
The best ones this month were construction spending, which some economists think it's after the hurricanes, some of the cleaning up that was done, some of the bad weather we've had. And retail was all right. The sluggish sector, the worst sector, is state and local governments, where we've just been shedding jobs with no end in sight.
That's because, of course, their tax revenues are down, and they're laying people off in a big way. But retail was okay, you say. Does that suggest some consumer confidence?
I think it seems to be holding its own there. Another key factor that people like to see is that temp jobs were up, and they were revised up for the last couple of months. And that is always a good sign, because a lot of times businesses will bring somebody on part-time and then turn the job into full-time.
Is there a change in gasoline prices?
No, I was talking to some economists. You know, the jobs report numbers kind of tells us what's going on. It's not a leading indicator, but when I was talking to some economists getting ready for the report, one of the economists I talked to a lot, a guy named Jim Glassman at J.P. Morgan Chase, he was in Louisiana when we were talking on the phone, and looking across the street from his hotel, gas was less than $3 a gallon. And he said that if that spread across the country, that would really help consumers put more money in their pockets and then kind of help the economy get rolling here, because high gas prices have really hurt the economy this year.
What about Washington's reaction to this? Are there the predictable comments from Republicans and Democrats, or is there anything new?
No, not too much. The squabbling continues here. I mean, the Republicans want, less regulations. They say that, Obama regulatory barriers are hurting the economy. And Obama's really pushing hard for his jobs bill as insurance against the double dip. And we'll see where it goes. But this report, is just not good enough for either side to, make too much of.
Okay, so a brief sigh of relief. What about the market so far today? We're not at the end of the day from the market standpoint as yet.
I think the market liked it initially, but there's got a lot on their mind, and I think it's been they've lost all their gains from the morning. There's just not a lot of confidence out there, and there's news out of Europe in the afternoon that seems to have unsettled people. The European economy is one of the weak spots facing the economy and just hasn't been going away. So we'll see.
103,000 jobs added last month. They also revised a number showing more job growth than had been thought in July and August. How important is that?
I think that's really key. I mean, that there was, their famous last month we had the famous goose egg. There were no jobs created at all. That was revised away. Now there was, I think, 57,000 jobs created that month. So it helps with the trends. The trends fit for an economy that is weak but not collapsing.
And that not collapsing, at least less bad news than expected, is really about as good as you can say, I take it, at this point.
Yeah, you take what you can get.
Okay. Greg Robb, again, senior Washington correspondent for MarketWatch.com. In a moment, we'll be talking about Republican politics, Mitt Romney, Herman Cain, and religion in the political sphere. On To The Point.
To The Point thanks Factiva from Dow Jones for its use of Factiva.com. With news and information from 10,000 global sources, Factiva is a resource for companies whose continued success rests upon timely strategic news on their industry, competitors, and themselves.
Mormon, I'll be back with To The Point. At the Citadel Military College in South Carolina, Mitt Romney made a neoconservative foreign policy speech today. He called for reversing cuts in the Pentagon, increasing military spending, and made this reference to President Obama.
I will not surrender America's role in the world. This is very simple. If you do not want America to be the strongest nation on earth, I'm not your president. You have that president today.
Romney's address contained one mention of God.
God did not create this country to be a nation of followers. America is not destined to be one of several equally balanced global powers. America must lead the world, or someone else will.
Romney's vision was pure George W. Bush, reflecting Romney's staff of advisors. It has obvious appeal in early primary states, especially in the South. But Romney's religious faith could be a barrier in that part of the country. He is well known, of course, to be a Mormon, which many conservative Christians regard as a false religion. Warren Cole-Smith is associate professor, publisher rather, of World Magazine. That's a journal of conservative evangelical Protestantism, beg your pardon, with a wide circulation. Now, Warren Smith, good to have you on our program.
It's great to be on with you. Thank you very much.
You wrote extensively this summer about Romney's Mormonism and indicated that you think that a lot of people in that part of the world, the Christian conservative evangelical community, aren't going to vote for him because of his religion. Why do you say that?
Well, it partly because of what you just said in your introduction, that historically many evangelical Christians, Orthodox Christians generally, not just evangelicals, considered Mormonism to be a false religion, and that the world view that is espoused by Mormons, not just specifically the theological tenets, but the theological tenets also inform just their view of the world generally. And I think many evangelicals, many conservative Christians are going to find a great deal of difficulty with Romney's Mormon faith. And by the way, I think there's plenty of evidence to suggest that that already has happened. I think that's one of the reasons why, especially early when Romney was the front runner, there was so much unsettledness, if I could say it that way, in the Republican field. When Bachman jumped in, she shot up in the polls. When Perry jumped in, when Perry jumped in, he shot up in the polls, and now we see a surge of Herman Cain. So, you know, there's just a tremendous amount of discomfort. Romney's money will buy him a certain amount of credibility and name recognition, and we've seen him hover at around 20 to 30%. But it's not clear to me at all, based on this election cycle and the last election cycle, whenever he spent $50 million, that he has any support above about 30% of the Republican Party.
Did you hear his very hawkish, very tough, military-oriented speech today?
Well, I didn't hear the entire speech, but I did hear pieces of it. And, you know, that's not a surprise. For one thing, you've got to consider the venue. It was the Citadel, which is, obviously a conservative military school.
In South Carolina, one of the early primary states.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Big military state, South Carolina. There are bases all along all in South Carolina, especially down along the coast. The other thing I think you've got to consider, too, is that Romney, while he has some solid economic, at least some people say he has some solid economic credentials, he has been a bit weak on foreign affairs and on defense issues. In fact, Rick Santorum, who is known as a social conservative from the very beginning of his campaign, has been really pushing his views on both foreign affairs and defense in particular. And I think that Romney is, I think that's been effective for Santorum, and Romney is doing this, at least in part, to try to combat a weakness in his strategy.
Back to the question of religion. Why is it that people feel that Mormonism is a false religion, and why do you think that will make a difference? Ultimately, John Kennedy was able to overcome the question of his Catholicism. A lot of people thought that that was maybe not a false religion, but that the Pope was going to take over the country.
Well, you're right. I think that's an interesting comparison between John Kennedy and Mitt Romney today. And I think that you rightly said that many people don't consider Catholicism a false religion. If you look at obviously there are differences among the various Christian bodies, Protestant, Catholic, and even within Protestantism, you have obviously various denominations. But historically, the Christian Church has actively affirmed a certain relatively small number of essentials. And just to make sort of the explanation easy, you could say that they're the essentials that are affirmed in the Apostles' Creed. A belief in one God, a belief in Jesus Christ, his only begotten Son, begotten and not made, is what the Creed says. And I know we don't want to get into a heavy theological conversation, but I will simply say this, that there is a fundamental agreement among the major streams of Christianity, Catholicism, Protestantism, and Orthodoxy, on these core values, these core doctrines of the Christian faith. Mormonism stands outside of those three historical streams of the Christian faith. They do not affirm the Apostles' Creed. They actively affirm doctrines that are antithetical to the Apostles' Creed. So this is not really just, you know, Warren Smith's opinion, but this is the historical judgment of both the theologians and sociologists down through the ages. Now, of course, every one of your listeners can decide for themselves whether such differences matter, but I think for many evangelicals, in fact, they do matter. And if I might just one more moment here talk about Kennedy. Kennedy did something that Mitt Romney has so far failed to do. Kennedy, when there was concern about his Roman Catholicism, went and spoke to the Houston Baptists, to the Baptist Association in Houston, Texas. It's a famous speech that 50 years later we're still talking about, in which he clearly stated who he was, what he believed, and whether or not and how his beliefs would affect his governing philosophy. Mitt Romney, as I said in my piece, in fact, I said it for my article in World Magazine and for Patheos, I said, that's a speech that Mitt Romney dare not make, because if he says that he believes the things that the Mormon Church espouses, many people are going to consider those beliefs highly irregular. And if he says he doesn't believe the things that the Mormon Church espouses. I think many of his friends and those that don't espouse his beliefs will wonder about a man who can't even stand up for his own.
Warren Smith, again, associate professor, publisher of A World Magazine, Christian magazine circulating widely in the United States. Nancy French is co-founder of Evangelicals for Mitt. That's a grassroots effort to get evangelical Christians to support former Governor Romney. She's co-authored memoirs by Ann Romney and Bristol Palin, and she was employed by the Romney campaign during the 2008 race. Nancy French, good to have you on our program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Do you disagree, first of all, with Warren Smith, that there are these differences between Mormons and others who call themselves Christians?
I don't disagree on a lot of what he says in terms of his description of the way some people view Mormonism. It is definitely outside Orthodox Christianity, and I don't think anybody really disputes that. Even, you know, Mormons will acknowledge that they don't consider themselves Orthodox Christians. But that doesn't mean necessarily that people shouldn't vote for him because of that difference.
Why not? People who say that there should be more religion in politics rather than less would want to know the answer to that question.
Well, for example, theology matters. So I'm not one of these people who gets up and says, well, Mormons, they're just like us. We're all the same. We all believe in Jesus. Let's hold hands and sing Kumbaya and vote for Governor Romney when it comes time. Instead, I believe that theology matters a great deal. I don't believe that Mormonism is true. If I did, I would be a Mormon instead of a conservative Presbyterian. However, theological beliefs only matter to the degree that it manifests itself in a political position when you're thinking about who to vote for. For example, if there are some religions that you could imagine would manifest itself in an anti-Israel political position, well, that religion would be a deal breaker for me. If someone had deeply held religious beliefs that ended up making policies that I disagreed with. But Mormonism, there's no air between, you know, evangelicalism and Mormonism in terms of their values. And so we should be thankful that Mormons are so true to their, you know, strong family values, because they'd actually be great candidates and great leaders. At least this one would be. Governor Romney would not advocating that evangelicals all of a sudden start voting for all the Mormon candidates. Not at all. We believe that this Mormon candidate, Governor Romney, is the right one for this time period in American history.
Nancy French with Evangelicals for Mitt. Back to Warren Smith with World Magazine. How do you think it would impact former Governor Romney's governance and his policies that he's a Mormon?
Well, first of all, I do agree with much of what Nancy just said, that his religion per se is not the issue, except insofar. Well, as an evangelical Christian, I do have a belief and a concern that elevating a Mormon to the to the number one job in the free world would have the impact of promoting Mormonism around the world. But setting that issue aside for just a moment, and to go back to the specific issue that she raised, I would agree that the theology doesn't matter except insofar as it informs policy. But I think it's disingenuous to say that theology doesn't inform policy. One of the things that, and this is just a quick example, and maybe not even the best example, but one that comes to mind, Romney has what I believe to be a well-deserved reputation as someone who changes his position on core issues. I think that it's possible on same-sex marriage, he's not been clear on Obamacare. Many people think that his plan in Massachusetts was the root of that plan, and yet now he distances himself from Obamacare. These issues, Romney's reputation, I don't want to be glib about this or be pejorative, but he has a reputation of being a flip-flopper. And I would ask the question, does that in fact derive from the Mormon doctrine of continuing revelation, which in fact does not believe that there are immutable absolute truths on which we can stand as a matter of principle, but that if our core principles will change either at the whims of, theologically speaking, at the whims of the leaders of the church, or as a more practical matter, based on what you happen to see in the culture and society today, will that have an impact? Romney has not declared himself on many of the issues that evangelicals are concerned about. He is where he has declared himself. In many cases, we find conflicting positions, and in some cases, we find, for example, on the issue of same-sex marriage or on same-sex unions, we find that Romney has a position that I think many evangelicals would, in fact, be uncomfortable with.
Okay, let me go back to Nancy French with evangelicals for a minute. What do you say to this? The idea of continuing revelation, the notion that the leader of the Mormon Church is, in fact, a prophet. And Romney has famously changed positions on a number of important issues. Do you see any relationship there at all?
Well, I think, number one, I think, Warren, you're overstating his flip-floppery, and we can get into that in a bit. But I think it's true that the Mormon Church has continuing revelation, but it's good news for those of us who believe that that church is wrong. This very continuing revelation has actually helped them. If you look at them over the past 150 years, it's allowed them to become more orthodox, not less. For example, they've opened the priesthood to African Americans. They've gotten rid of polygamy. The Mormon Church has inched closer to the truth because of this continuing revelation. But the Evangelical Church has been less doctrinally stable than they have. For example, liberal Presbyterians, Episcopalians, some Lutherans, they've decided it's okay to have gay priests or gay leaders, and that's much more doctrinally unstable than Mormonism. But you never hear someone say, well, you can't vote for this candidate because he's Episcopalian.
Let me bring in a third guest to our program. Janet Wiley is a businesswoman with executive experience in a technological company. She's also a Republican delegate based in Jacksonville Beach, Florida, and she participated in the Florida Straw poll. She voted for Herman Cain. All of a sudden, we see Herman Cain rising in the polls. Janet Wiley, good to have you on our program.
Thank you, Warren. Good to be here.
Last July, Mr. Cain said that Romney's Mormon religion would not be a problem for him, but that it would be for Southern evangelical Christians. He apologized later for having made that comment. But do you think that there's a point to that? And do you think that Herman Cain is rising in the polls in part because of his religion?
Don't think there's a point to that, honestly, because I think most Americans now, and certainly most of the people at the Florida Straw Poll, understand that this country is in dire straits, that we need to fix our financial house right now, that has got to be our number one priority, fixing the financial house and creating jobs. And we believed, certainly at the Florida Straw Poll and with the delegates that I spoke with, that we need a proven leader who can get in there and get the job done. And people are not looking at race, they're not looking at gender, they're not looking at religion, they're looking at performance. I think we're into the point now where we have to be pragmatic and say who can get the job done. And I think that was a lot of the reaction to Herman Cain, is he convinced people he could do the job.
Okay. Won the Florida polls and shot up in the public opinion polls at the same time. Again, we'll be back in a moment with Janet Wiley, Nancy French, and Warren Smith on Reporter's Notebook a bit later. 10 years of America's war in Afghanistan. Where is it now? Back in a moment with To the Point from PRI.
A complete archive of past programs is available online at kcrw.com/to the point. You can also order a CD copy by calling 1-888-600-5279.
We're only back with To the Point, talking today, obviously, about the Republican race for presidency. First brought up the issue of the Mormonism of Mitt Romney and whether that might make a difference. This after we heard his a very hawkish foreign policy speech this morning, or heard about it. And now we're moving into the issue of Herman Cain, who suddenly has shot up, and in some poll, I think a CBS poll, has pulled even with Mitt Romney. In other polls, he is tied now or even doing better than Rick Perry. Janet Wiley, back to you. Tell us a little bit about that Florida Straw poll and what it was like there.
All right. It was a very high-energy gathering of Republicans in the state. It actually lasted over several days. There was a event called Presidency 5, which really culminated in the straw poll. But going on concurrently with that was the CPAC convention, which was a conservative political action group. And so you really got to see the candidates in a couple different lights there. And you got to see them in the debate mode. You also got to see them in individual speech mode. And I think that was where Herman Cain really pulled away from the pack. I had said earlier to a couple people that I really went into the straw poll expecting to vote for Rick Perry. And then Herman Cain spoke right before the poll, and his speech was so dynamic and so motivating and so thought-provoking that almost every delegate, regardless of who they went in there expecting to vote for, ended up on their feet the whole speech because it was just so moving. And it was a very, very dynamic speech. And I sent a text to one of my friends who had to leave and said, Cain is going to win. Watch. And he did, of course. But it was primarily because people responded in a very positive way to his speech. I don't think it was a negative response to anyone else. I think it was a positive response to Cain.
He, of course, is an accomplished speaker. He was a conservative radio talk show host. Why do you say that he, rather than Romney, has what I think are necessary, the business credentials to get the country out of the current economic slump?
Right. Well, he certainly has good business credentials, and I think Romney also has good business credentials. But I think part of what people are responding to is Cain's background. You know, Cain had very modest beginnings. He's self-made. He went through the school of hard knocks. And he did share part of his personal story of optimism and hope at the caucus. And not just his optimism about America and his hope of how he created his own career as a self-made man, but he also shared with us his triumph over cancer. And that was very moving. The other thing about him is he has passion and he has fire in the belly. And that came across. And it was very, very moving to the delegates. And I think also, and this is a big one, people walked away feeling like what you see is what you get. He is the real deal. And that the Herman Cain you see on the campaign trail would be the same Herman Cain in the White House. And that matters to people.
He's running, though, a very sort of low-profile, low-key campaign. He's pushing a book at the same time that he is running for president. And he has said himself that that's the way he's going to continue to operate. What does that say about the kind of concentration and focus he might bring to the presidency?
Well, I think all of them are pushing books, aren't they? Is there anyone up there who doesn't have a book?
I mean, really? I'm not sure
that... I laugh because there was a book table and every single one of them had a book. So I'm not sure the book matters one way or another. But I think he is, at one point, a very pragmatic guy, and he's a roll-up-the-sleeves-and-get-the-job-done kind of guy. And that came across. And I don't think he's flowery, and I don't think he's... You know, he's out there, like, he's not flashy, I guess is what I'm trying to say. He's very matter-of-fact and very pragmatic, and he says, this is my idea, this is what I've got, this is what I can offer you. And he's hoping that he can just keep, you know, sending the message out and having people receive the message, and as you see, the poll's slowly going up. And I think that's being effective so far.
Janet Wiley, again, businesswoman with executive experience in high-tech companies and a Republican for Herman Cain in Florida. Merle Black is professor of politics and government at Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia. He's co-author with his brother Earl of Divided America, The Ferocious Power Struggle in American Politics. Merle Black, it's always good to have you on our program. Thanks for being with us today.
Nice to be here, Warren.
We've been hearing, as I think you're aware, a bit of the argument over Mitt Romney's Mormonism and whether that will hurt him with particularly Southern evangelicals. And we've heard a bit about Herman Cain as well. What's your take on, well, first of all, we had a speech today by Mitt Romney. I don't know if you had a chance to hear it.
No, but, I didn't hear it.
Well, very, very hawkish speech, very neoconservative, big on Pentagon spending and being the strongest nation in the world, those kinds of themes, reminiscent of George W. Bush, made, of course, at the Citadel, as was pointed out earlier, Military College in South Carolina, where one of the early primaries is going to occur. We've heard very little about Rick Perry on our program, but how do you think they're all shaping up right now? And let's start with this issue of Mormonism.
Well, Mormonism is a problem for some of the Christian evangelicals, but I don't think by any means it's Romney's biggest problem. I think his biggest problem is that he's seen as not conservative enough for the huge majority of conservatives who will make up the Republican primary voters. And I think this may be why you're seeing Romney move more toward the right. I didn't hear the speech this morning, but I'm not surprised he's moving in that direction. he's doing quite a few things here that would position himself as conservative enough for the groups that make up majorities among the Republican primary and caucus voters. So, although I do think there are some evangelicals who would not vote for him because of his religion, I don't think that's the essence of his problem. And I should say also that right now, according to the polls that we've seen, and this we're getting closer and closer, but we're still about 3 months out. Quinnipiac had a poll just issued on October the 5th that broke it down by white evangelicals. And among white evangelicals, there's absolutely no consensus about which candidate to support. Perry's at 19%, Romney's at 20%, Kane's at 19%, and Don't Know is about at 20%. So the conservative evangelicals right now have not coalesced behind a single candidate. And one other point here, in a Pew poll, it just came out a day or so ago, when Romney is matched against President Barack Obama among white evangelicals, he beats the president 75-20.
Wow.
Yeah, 75-20. So I don't see that as a problem for Romney if he can get the nomination. The white evangelicals are the most pro-Republican group we have in presidential elections. And from, you know, from that the Pew survey, there's absolutely no evidence that they wouldn't be, again, the most conservative group in the elections of next year.
Merle Black, again, at Emory University in Atlanta. Warren Smith, back to you with World Magazine. What do you say to that poll, 75-20 among Christian evangelicals, Romney over Obama? Do you think that Republicans want a candidate that'll win?
Well, I think that's right. I don't disagree with anything that Merle said. And you know, that's not a huge surprise that, you know, many white evangelical conservatives would not, they are just not going to vote for Barack Obama just because he's just too liberal for them. So, you know, that poll is not necessarily a surprise. I think that the issue, though, is, again, what Merle said, is he's got to get the nomination. And the question is, will evangelicals vote for him? And I agree with Merle, too, on this point, that his Mormonism is not his biggest problem. My position is that it's the root of some of his other problems. It's the cause of some of his other problems, his the flopping on the issues and otherwise. Obviously, people can disagree with that. But my point is that while the Mormonism might not be his biggest problem, the real question is, will it be enough of a problem for 3 or 4 million evangelical voters who will not show up in the general election if it gets that far, or will support others during the primary? And I think the answer to that question is probably yes. And I think that 3 or 4 or 5 million, given the number of voters that turn out in the primaries, that number will probably be enough. You know, in the past, even in the general election, evangelical politics has been sort of a bell curve where, you know, the Democrats have been on the left side of the bell curve and the Republicans have been on the right, and there's been sort of a race to the middle to win that the fat part of the bell curve, the moderate middle part of the bell curve. But I think what we're seeing is that there are fat tails on that bell curve, and that you're not going to be able to move too close to the middle without alienating a big part of the folks in the fat tail who will just not show up at the polls and vote for you anymore.
I take it you think Rick Perry is the likely nominee. Is that right?
Well, I think, you know, the other thing is, while I don't disagree, you know, at all with Janet's positions on Herman Cain, I think Herman Cain has a lot to offer. The hard reality of presidential politics is that the nominee is going to have to be able to raise $500 million or more. Between the nominee and his advocates, you know, the super PACs and the other folks that are going to be raising money, it may have to be closer to $1 billion. We already know that Barack Obama is probably going to be able to raise $1 billion in this election cycle. And the other thing that we know is that the correlation between most money raised and winning the election is an astronomical number. Merle would likely know that. But
well, let me go back to Merle Black on that question. What about Herman Cain? How do you explain that all of a sudden he is tied in the Quinnipiac poll that you mentioned with Romney and with Perry, also, of course, with Don't Know, which is probably very significant? The CBS poll shows him actually leading.
Yeah, I think, you know, you can go up fast and come down real fast. I think Herman Cain is a phenom. He has his head and his heart in the same place. He is loved by white conservatives, white Republicans across the South, because he says a lot of things that they really agree with and believe, and they love hearing this from an African-American man. And, you know, Herman Cain is, I think, absolutely sincere in what he's doing here. The problem with Cain, though, is, you know, in terms of how far he can go, is that he has no political executive experience, you know, and he's never been elected to any office before. This is the most important office in the world. So at some point, questions are going to be raised about how well his business experience really translates into political leadership, because they're very, very different things in a lot of ways. But I think Herman Cain has tremendous talents. He's a tremendous asset for the Republican Party. He's going to have to have this kind of effect in the future. He's going to have to win something. He's going to have to win a caucus in Iowa, or he's going to have to win a primary. I don't think he's going to win in New Hampshire. He'd have to win in a state like South Carolina, or he'd have to do something in the state of Florida. You know, it's one thing to win a straw poll in Florida, where you got several thousand delegates. It's another thing to win, lead the field in Florida, where there may be 2 million people voting in the Republican primaries, you know, at the end of January.
What about the money?
Year. Well, that's the other thing. He doesn't have a whole lot of money. I think he's raised more money in the last week or so because of the success in the Florida poll. So he's got more money than before, but he has very little organization, I think. And you're going to have an organization to get out voters in these big states, and especially if you happen to win in one or two states. If you don't have organizations in place, it becomes very difficult to take advantage of that later on.
So, yeah. Janet Wiley, let me go back to you again, a supporter of Herman Cain. Why is it that you think he's going to be able to pull this off, given the all the assets that he has, but the tremendous disadvantage of not being able to raise that kind of money and not having the right kind of executive experience?
Well, I have two things I wanted to address. One of them was the money, and the other was the president as CEO of the country. You know, our founding fathers did not have political experience, and this first several presidents we had in this country did not have political experience, had business experience, and they were excellent presidents. And so somehow along the way, we've turned the presidential contest into a version of American Idol. And I think that we need to stop that. I think that we need to vet the people fully, and we need to pick people based on courage and policy and leadership. And I think that whoever the Republican nominee is, the Republican Party and the Republicans in this country will get behind them, and they will write checks. So I think when the nomination becomes clear, I don't think that's a problem.
But you've got to have the money in order to get the nomination. There are a lot of states you have to run in.
You do. You do. And so, you know, you get into that, you know, chicken and egg thing. But I do believe that the Florida straw poll gave him a lot of momentum. And again, I went into the Florida straw poll thinking that I was going to vote for Rick Perry. I mean, I was a Herman Cain convert. I did not go in there as a Herman Cain supporter. And so I think that will happen. The more people he touches, I think the more people will write checks. So that's thing number one. Thing number two is president as CEO. I would personally, I'm very pro-business, I would personally rather have a president who has CEO experience and multinational CEO experience like Mr. Cain does, rather than have someone who's been in Congress and has no other experience. Really, all they ever learned to do was raise money for re-election. I would much rather see someone who knows how to make decisions and knows how to weigh data and knows how to hire people and knows how to create jobs. And also who's been out of the country on business and has learned more about trade by doing trade with international partners.
All right, Janet Wiley, again, supporter of Herman Cain. Nancy French, back to you with Evangelicals for Mitt. Looking at these recent polls, Quinnipiac, with Herman Cain now tying your man, Romney, virtually, and Perry as well, why do you think it is that Romney, as long as he has been campaigning, really since prior to 2008, and as well known as he is amongst Republicans, just simply can't seem to get so far into a really solid lead?
Well, I think that's about to change. I think people rightly understand the past few months is a time to shop around. You know, we're not married to anybody yet. I've been committed to Romney since, I think, about 05, so I'm pretty committed. And but I think now is the time where, you know, Sarah Palin said recently that she's not going to run and Chris Christie's not going to run. So now the field is set, and now people can critically look at Cain and Perry and Governor Romney. And, you know, you have to eventually, you know, fish or cut bait. And so you have to figure out who you're going to go with. And I think you'll see the poll numbers change as people realize that there's not going to be some sort of conservative messiah come down from the heavens, the perfect person, the reincarnation of Ronald Reagan that everyone is going to rally behind. It's going to be an actual person, a mortal human being who has his flaws or her flaws. And you just have to figure out who the best candidate is. And our message to evangelicals is to not vote for the most electable evangelical candidate, but to vote for the best candidate who can beat Barack Obama. And we think that's Mitt Romney.
Merle Black, back to you in the religion issue. What about the problem that Mitt Romney might have with Democrats and independents who are concerned about Mormonism, people who tend to be more secular, perhaps, than the Republicans are, not necessarily, but who certainly might have their own suspicions about his religion?
Well, I don't think that's going to be a major issue. I can't imagine the Obama campaign really bringing up Romney's religion in a general.
Well, nobody's going to bring it up, it would seem to me. Herman Cain has and then had to apologize for it. I wouldn't think anybody would bring it up.
But, yeah, right.
But isn't it something? Is one of those things that sort of lurks beneath the surface?
I think it's pretty far beneath the surface right now. I'm looking again at this Pew poll, and among independents, Romney's beating Obama by 54 to 41, 13 points.
So you think then that that's not a problem at the moment?
No, among white independents, he's beating Obama 59 to 36.
Wow.
I don't think that's a problem.
That doesn't sound like it. Well, you sound as if you think it's all over.
No. I don't think it's all over at all. No, okay. Not at all. No. No, we got a Republican field here where no one's built, you know, convincing support. Romney has been a front runner, but a very weak front runner. And Romney's still got to put it together. He's got to win something, and especially he's got to win that New Hampshire primary.
Why do you think he is such a weak front runner?
Because I think the conservatives dominate Republican Party primaries, and they still are not convinced that Romney is really one of them. I think the health care program that he put together in Massachusetts, he's still on the defensive on that program. He's got some, you know, replies to that, and, you know, he's saying President Obama should have called him. He would have told him not to do X, Y, and Z. But still, that's a huge issue out there, and it puts Romney immediately on the defensive. He has to still explain why he supported that program, especially the individual mandate. I think that's hanging over him right now, and it may not be enough to you know, kill his chances for the nomination, but I think that's one of the reasons why he really hasn't taken off.
We both agreed that candidates wouldn't mention religion, but apparently Jacob Weisberg, the editor of Slate, has raised serious questions about Mormonism, and it doesn't have to be left up to the candidates. There's independent expenditures, and there's all kinds of other ways that issue can be injected into the campaign. Are you sure that's not going to happen if Romney gets the nomination?
Well, it might happen, but I don't think that's going to be decisive for most voters who would be seriously considering voting for Romney.
Okay, so just a non-issue as far as you're concerned.
Yeah, right. That's not going to. That's, you know, the issue, the election, I think, is largely going to turn on the Obama presidency. That's going to be the driving force in this election.
And the economy.
Yes, right.
Okay. Well, thank you all. Merle Black, again, professor of politics and government, Emory University, author with his brother of Divided America, The Ferocious Power Struggle in American Politics, and that's what we're seeing. Janet Wiley, Republican, very much in favor of Herman Cain, a person experienced in technological companies as a businesswoman. Nancy French, the co-founder of Evangelicals for Mitt, grassroots effort for Romney. And Warren Cole Smith, associate publisher of World Magazine, very worried about Romney's Mormonism. Thank you all very much for being on our program today. 10 years ago today, just a month after September 11th, U.S. military planes began bombing Taliban training camps in Afghanistan. Since then, $338 billion have been spent. 1,780 American lives have been lost. One former U.S. commander says the U.S. and its NATO allies are a little better than halfway to achieving their goals. What about the Afghan Americans who returned to their homeland? We'll hear more about them in a moment on To the Point.
For more information about To The Point or to sign up for the free podcast, visit kcrw.com/To The Point.
We're only back with Reporter's Notebook on To The Point. When Afghanistan's Taliban government fell to America's military power, many expatriates here in America flooded home for various reasons. For The Washington Post, Ernesto Londano has been reporting on how those people feel now. Ernesto Londano, good to have you on our program.
Thanks for having me.
One of the words that comes up high in your story on this in the Washington Post is disillusionment. Explain that.
I think what you have to remember is when you think back of late 2001 and early 2002, you had a huge segment of Afghan Americans who had been waiting years and in some cases decades to come back home, to revisit relatives, to take a look at their childhood homes. And to reacquaint themselves with their country. And the U.S. invasion sort of paved the way for that for many people. And it was a time of great emotion. It was a time of great hope. If you fast forward 10 years, what I found is that many of the people who arrived with smiles and sort of tears of joy are now very disillusioned. They're frustrated by how unsafe the country remains, how little has been accomplished, and just by the sheer fact that the country remains at war, that you still have a huge footprint of a foreign military on the ground, you still have the Taliban holding sway over very large swaths of the country, and really there are very few reasons to be optimistic about the near-term future.
You report on some who did make a lot of money.
That's true. A lot of Afghan Americans were really positioned to play pivotal roles in the reconstruction. And a lot of the people I spoke to came in with really very good intentions. They wanted to rebuild. And on the one hand, they understood the United States. They understood corporate America. And on the other hand, they were fluent in Dari and in Pashto, the languages spoken in Afghanistan. And as such, they could be these sort of ideal vehicles to get some of these reconstruction projects off the ground, to understand what was needed and what it took to get business done in Afghanistan. And for that reason, a lot of people really, really cashed in. Whether or not they came in with a little bit of greed or simply good intentions, a lot of people really became phenomenally wealthy off this war, many of them Afghan Americans.
I have some of them seen, as I should say, you have reported that some of them have seen that a lot of the money that came into the country has not gone to the projects that it was intended for.
That's right. I think what happened to a large extent is you funneled a ton of money into a country with no real institutions and no real sort of capacity to handle the amount of money that was coming in. And while some of these projects had, were good ideas and there were some good intentions behind them, when you dump them into a country with really no veins to make sure that the funding gets to the places it needs to get to, what often happened is it got snarled along the way and it got pocketed. You also saw a pretty corrupt government and a pretty corrupt elite take root in Kabul. And what happened with a lot of the money is the people who were sort of the funnels to get this money spent and get these projects off the ground ended up getting ensnarled in that culture of cronyism and corruption. And what you saw is a lot of the money either vanished, was sort of outright pocketed, or the people who made a decent profit didn't want to invest it in Afghanistan because they didn't think it would be safe and they didn't think there were industries that really showed any long-term promise. So they literally shipped suitcases full of cash outside of the country to keep the money in places where it would be safe.
You talked to one man who actually became a part of the Hamid Karzai government. What happened to him?
He was a physician assistant in the United States, and he and his wife returned. They were very eager to sort of plunge back into Afghanistan. He accepted a job with the foreign ministry. He was the consul general initially in Toronto and then played a role at the United States mission in New York. 4 years after he initially joined the government, he became very disillusioned. He said that he found the government was very corrupt, and that ethnic rivalries were really destroying any sort of hope for a national unity government, something that really sort of would carry the country forward, and he left. He's still in Afghanistan, and he's now in the private sector, and he says that he's now making money to make up for the money he lost while he was in public service.
Do the people that you talk to have any hope for what might happen after the U.S. troop withdrawal in 2014?
You know, I think there's the argument that once the international community extracts itself from Afghanistan, and once the amount of money that has been pouring in diminishes, that Afghans will make sense of it, and that they will find a way to make the country run. You know, it won't be smoothly. It won't be sort of a model democratic society that perhaps some envisioned a decade ago. But but some people say that once you remove some of the elements from this equation, the country might just sort of take a course of its own and find its own way. One of the long-term problems is there's very little industry in Afghanistan. There's a mining sector which shows some promise, but has many challenges, including, of course, security and institutional capacity. But beyond that, the country has very little to fall back on financially.
Okay. Well, that's all the time we have. 10 years after the invasion, the longest war in American history, and that's how Afghan Americans are feeling. Ernesto Londoño with The Washington Post, thank you so much for being on our program today. Producers of To the Point are Francis Anderton, Christian Bordahl, Andrea Brody, Katie Cooper, Sonia Geis, and Caitlin Schamburg. I'm Warren Olney. Join us again for To the Point.
PRI, Public Radio International.